for some politics.
Get ready to rumble!
You wanna talk smack? You in the right place. So take a step back before I get all up in your face. I know you got your little views, you know I got mine. But there's like 50 other dudes holding on the phone line. Your voice will be heard, sir.
Next caller, please.
And if I don't concur, we can agree to disagree.
We're talking fantasy sports and politics. Fantasy sports and politics. Fantasy sports and politics. Fantasy sports and politics.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I'm back. You know who it is. Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to the FSP show. I am your host, and for most of the summer, I think for the rest of the summer, until about August or maybe beginning of football season, I will be the host of this show. Like I said last week, and I'll say it again this week, our esteemed host, Mr. Vic Gardner, is doing his due and is obligated to do it. So I'm going to fill in as, instead of him. And instead of being the co-host on this show, I am going to be hosting the show. And as always, this is sponsored by the Fantasy Sportsbook Casino, fantasysportsbookandcasino.com, a website where winners play and players win. As along with the telephone number that I'm going to give you right now, it's 347-637-3220. 347-637-3220, and as I always say, it's the place to be if you want to talk to me. And it's sponsored by the same sponsor, the Fantasy Sportsbook and Casino.com hotline, where winners play and players win. Okay, so it is what it is. We have a chat room sitting out there waiting for you if you'd like to jump in the chat room. Versus talk to me, and I don't know why you wouldn't want to talk to me, because I'm a personable guy. I like to think so. But the chat room is there if you're shy and you decided to listen to the show, but you don't want to talk. You want to remain anonymous. Excuse me. You want to remain anonymous and type your words in the chat room, make a statement, you have your claim to fame, comment. Or even ask a question. And it doesn't have to be on the subject at hand. It could be anything that you like, people. That's one thing I do on this show. I don't care if I'm on a subject and you want to go completely do a 180 and go the opposite direction, that's fine. Because I'm focused enough, I shouldn't say like that. If you want to talk about something other than the subject matter, that's fine. We can talk about it when we finish talking about your subject matter. We'll revert back to what the subject I was talking about. So it doesn't make a difference if you have, by chance, something pops in your head, and that happens all the time to people, pops in your head, and you decide you want to ask a question about something or make a statement about something or – maybe a word I said or two words I said or a sentence I said or whatever, a statement I said, hit you the wrong way, and you decide to put it in the chat room, go right ahead. And if it's in a different direction, fine. We'll address it if I deem necessary to address it on the air. But if not, I'll look at it in passing. It's just something that you want to say, that really nothing that you want to put on the air. Fine, no problem. I could do that too. The point is, it's there for your convenience. I'm going too long with the chat room, but it's there for your convenience, and you do whatever you will or want to do with it. We have a great show in store for you today. I'm a little tongue-tied. I don't know why. May need a drink of water, but I'll get that. A little tongue-tied. We're going to be going over some news and notes over the past week of what's been going on in sports. We're going to be talking about some football. We're going to be talking about some basketball. There's a lot of basketball stuff talking about, the NBA Finals at the B. And we're also going to start our preview, our NFL preview, breaking it down by divisions. And we're going to start in the AFC. I happen to be an AFC guy, so we're going to start in the AFC. And we're going to go through all the AFC divisions first, and then ended up after the AFC divisions, all four of them. And then after that, we're going to go into the NFC. And this is how I'm going to do it. I'm going to go to the AFC East first, then the AFC North, then the AFC South, and the AFC West. The reason I'm going to AFC West is because I want to preview that AFC West division, home of the one of the teams that went to the Super Bowl. And then on the other turn, after we finish up that, which is four Saturdays, we're going to be doing the NFC. And we're going to go in the same order. NFC East, then the NFC North, then the NFC South, and ended up with the Super Bowl champions division, the NFC West. That's how we're going to go over the next 8 weeks. So starting today, and ending in 8 weeks later, we're going to be talking about breaking down each division. So that's going to probably be bring us probably near the end of July, if I'm not mistaken, I think is about right, or beginning of August, somewhere around there. So that's what we're going to be doing. Hope you enjoy it. If you got any questions, like I said, the number to call in is 347-637-3220. 347-637-3220. Feel free, or just sit back and listen. But right now, before we go into the NFL, I want to talk about the NBA Finals, which is 3-1 right now, which is San Antonio happens to be winning that battle right now. And for those LeBron, I keep on saying it, for those LeBron James fans and the Miami Heat fans, where are you? Okay? All I can say is, where are you? I said before this series started, I like the San Antonio Spurs. I still like the San Antonio Spurs even more. I thought they were a better team, maybe didn't have the individual talent that the Miami Heat had, but they were the better team. And to tell you the truth, I think it's playing out. If you look at what's been going on, the Miami Heat let me put it this way. Last Sunday, Miami Heat, let's go a little bit before that. On Thursday, June 5th, is when the first game started, and the Spurs beat Miami by 17 points in San Antonio. And a lot of people were looking around, and quite naturally, a lot of people, and I know a few people that I've talked to, were on the Miami Heat, thinking that they had the better team. I didn't think so. I thought the San Antonio Spurs, who had the best record in basketball with 62 wins, and I think they were had over 30 wins on the road. So I thought that even though they played at home the first two games, I thought they would at least win one game, which they did. They won it 110-95 in convincing fashion. And then they go back. And on Sunday, the 8th, and the Miami Heat, even though it was a last-second shot, which cut the score down to 2, but it was a close game. Let me put it this way. They played in San Antonio, but it was a close game. Okay, for the most part. San Antonio, for the majority of that game, up until the last 5 or 6 minutes of that game, give or take, were winning that game. And Miami outscored them 21-18 in the, 34-35. Let me backtrack here. All right. Miami scored. They were tied up at the halftime. All right. And then it was a offensive display on both teams, with the Spurs coming out on top by one in the third quarter of that second game. So they were up, 78-77 going into the fourth quarter. And Miami outscored the Spurs 21-18. So it was a close game. And quite naturally, Heat won by 2 points in San Antonio. And everybody who were on the Miami Heat bandwagon came out in droves saying, uh-oh, now San Antonio's in trouble, because now they're going back to Miami, split 1-1, and everybody was on LeBron James' bandwagon. Not me. Not me. I'm saying this is 1-1, and I still believe in the San Antonio Spurs. Okay? I still believe them. And you know why? Third game played in Miami Heat country. Okay? And what happens? Kawhi Leonard decided, you know, LeBron, you ain't as big and bad as you thought you were. He scores 29 points on LeBron. I think LeBron scored 22 points in that game, 25 points, something like that. But he was the story of the game. The story of the game, keeping LeBron pretty much in check along with the rest of the San Antonio Spurs. And the Heat lose not by 2 points, not by 5 points, not by 10 points, but by 15 points. No, excuse me, 19 points. 111-92. 111-92. The two-time world champs. The four-time in the finals world champs. Beaten by 19 points. Hello. Hello, Dwayne Wade. Hello, LeBron James. Hello, Chris Bosh. What happened? Well, Miami hadn't lost a back-to-back game in the playoffs, and I can't remember how long. And what happens? Comes Thursday game. Everybody's jumping on the Miami Heat bandwagon. They're coming back. They don't lose back-to-back games. This ain't going to happen again. That was a fluke. San Antonio Spurs can't put up another record-breaking percentage of shooting. That ain't happening. Not to LeBron James, not to Dwayne Wade, not to Chris Bosh and rest of the Miami Heat. Well, guess what? If you thought it was bad in the third game, the fourth game was even more pitiful. LeBron James got his 28 points, but, and I'm saying but, there was a missing persons report put out for Dwayne Wade. Where were you at? Where was Dwayne Wade? He scored a measly not 5, not 6. I'll give it to him. He caught a dozen double digits, but he barely got there. He scored 10 points. Chris Bosh, he scored 12. Points. Are you kidding me? The big three scored a combined. Now, the Miami Heat scored 86 points in this game. LeBron James scored 28 points. And Chris Bosh and Dwayne Wade didn't even score as much as LeBron James. They only scored 22 points between them. 12 for Chris Bosh, 10 for Dwayne Wade. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? A point guard, a shooting guard that sits on the bench, scored more than Dwayne Wade, scored more than Chris Bosh. He scored 14 points, and he's a bench player. And the score. And the score of the game, people. Now, check this out. The score of the game, and if you had watched the game, it was pitiful. It was pitiful. You looked at the faces of Chris Bosh, and the reason I'm pushing those guys out there for the simple reason, these are the big three. These are supposed to be the besides Dwayne Wade being there and already won a championship before these other two came, the saviors. They're going to elevate the Miami Heat to dynasty and epic proportions. And that's where I'm including these three guys together, because this is supposed to be, in quotation marks, the big three. They scored 28 points, 12 points, and 10 points, respectively. That's LeBron James, Chris Bosh, and Dwayne Wade, which equates out to 50 points. So James Jones, who was on the bench, scored more than Dwayne Wade, and just 1 point shy of Chris Bosh. And he's a bench player that hardly ever plays. And again, Kawhi Leonard scores 20 points, 14 rebounds, and was in LeBron James' face, even though he scored 28 points all night. And now what do you do? The final score of this game, as anyone who watched this game or knows anything about the basketball finals, was 107-86. The Spurs once again get in triple digits, and the Heat once again don't. And the Heat hasn't broken the century mark in this series. They won the game 98-96, the one game they won. The other games they haven't got into double digits. So, what's going to happen? Who knows? Are the Heat going to win back-to-back games? Because they've already lost back-to-back games. And you have to think that it's panic city now. It's an all points bulletin out for anybody and anybody who can score. The most they've scored in this game is 98 points. In this series, I should say, 98 points. 98 points. Okay? The last two games, I think the Spurs have found the secret formula and are wearing the Miami Heat out on it. Thursday, just as well as could have been Friday the 13th for the Miami Heat, because whatever could go wrong went wrong. The faces of Chris Bosh, LeBron James, and Dwayne Wade look like a defeated bunch. And I have to say this also. The coach, Eric Spoelstra, looked like a defeated coach with no answers. They tried everything, pulling guys that haven't hardly ever played on the bench, and that did no good. The relentless attack on both sides of the court, offensively and defensively, of the San Antonio Spurs, the Miami Heat doesn't have an answer for. Now, unless San Antonio Spurs revert back to what happened in the fourth quarter of the second game, if they revert back to that playing the fifth game of the series, then the Miami Heat has a chance. But otherwise than that, the San Antonio Spurs for four games, and for four games, well, I should say for three games and three quarters, three games and three quarters has been the best team, without a doubt. The one time that they got careless, lost their focus or concentration, and that's when the Miami Heat took advantage and decided to take the game that was given to them. And essentially, it was given to them, okay? So it is what it is. And we'll have to wait and see what happens. But I, in my opinion, come the game on Sunday, Eric Spoelstra is going to be have a short hook on people that aren't performing. Let me put it that way. Besides the big three, I think he's going to have a quick hook on trying to find a combination that's going to work. And he may even, in fact, start a new starting lineup, which is a sign of panic to me, when the game tips off on Sunday. Because obviously what they're doing for the last two games, let me put it this way, for the last four games, with the exception of a short part in the fourth quarter of game two, hasn't worked. San Antonio's been a better team. Team, I stress, team. And it's obvious to those who watch basketball on a consistent basis or know anything about basketball that the San Antonio Spurs were a better team. And if I was a betting person, and if I went to go to fantasysportsbookandcasino.com and to make a wager, I would wager on the San Antonio Spurs closing out in San Antonio this NBA Finals with another championship for Tim Duncan and company and for Greg Popovich, who's one hell of a coach, and Mikal, who's a frequent caller on this show and other shows that I host or co-host, said that it's going to come down to coaching. And I do believe that he's right because the coach has put the right people in place, made the right, said the right motivational things to whoever needed it in the San Antonio Spurs, and Eric Spoelstra hasn't had the answer. Because, quite frankly, in my opinion, there is no answer for this. There is no answer for this. That's just what I'm saying. So, just think about that, people. Think about what you think. Think about what you think. That really makes a lot of sense. Think about the what's happening here. And the so-called experts, okay, all of them jumping on a LeBron James bandwagon when they're not really looking at it through realistic glasses, real good glasses, tinted glasses maybe, and thinking LeBron James is going to be able to do this again against San Antonio. The better San Antonio team, they learned a lot from last year. They had that. It was an anomaly what that happened to them because that was an experienced team. Popovich probably garnered some of that responsibility, not able to make the adjustments, necessary adjustments. And it compounded things, and quite naturally when you got a team. Now, I'm not saying Miami's not a talented team. I should say this. I'm not saying Miami's not a talented team that has better individual talent. I'll put it that way, because they're not a more talented team, in my opinion. And I said it before, and I'll say it again. They're not a more talented team versus Miami, who's got talented individuals. And that's a difference. That's a difference. And just because you have, quote-unquote, the best player on the planet, which I still don't believe, and I understand he's won multiple MVPs. I understand that. Got to give him his props. I understand that he's won multiple championships. He's won two. He's been to the championship four straight times. I understand that. Look at the competition. And you know, this is another knock, but look at the competition that he's played in the finals, okay? And they've gotten to the finals, but look at the competition he played in the finals, okay? And also, look at the division he plays in. If he played in the West, I know people are going to say, well, he doesn't play in the West. He plays in the East, and he's only playing what's dealt to him. I understand that. But the fact of the matter is the East has been inferior for such a long time, and there's no really great quality teams, not the type of teams that have the type of individuals, individual players, like the Miami Heat have. Now, I do believe, just like I believe about the San Antonio Spurs being a more talented team versus more talented individual players than the Miami Heat, I still believe that the Indiana Pacers have a more talented team than the Miami Heat, even though they got beat. But it's not always the talented team that wins, and the reason being that is that you have to have the physical talent, and then you also have, and this is a big key, you have to have the mental toughness to overcome adversity when it comes, because it's going to come in the regular season, and it ramps up in the playoffs, regardless of what level the playoffs are, if you're in the first round or you're in the conference finals. You've got to be mentally tough to overcome adversity. And Indiana, I don't know if they ever will get there, but I think they have a better overall team, not individual talent on the team, but a better overall team than the Miami Heat. But sometimes that doesn't win out. So, and that has a lot to do with your mental makeup and the mental makeup of your team. I don't know if that's a coach's thing. I don't know if a coach mentally toughen up a team to get them over the hump where they're stymied at, or it's the players themselves that have to get themselves mentally tougher to get them over the hump when adversity hits the team or themselves. Be that as may, we'll find out if how mentally tough the Miami Heat are. Whether they put up a fight in San Antonio. Now, they won in San Antonio by ever so small a margin. But this is a closeout game for San Antonio. So it's supposedly going to be the toughest game to close when you close, try to close the team out. And I'm pretty sure they don't want to go back to Miami. So this is, in my opinion, this is – it may be the fifth game, but this is a game seven for San Antonio, in my opinion. Mentally, they got to take it as a game seven. I know the Miami Heat have to take it as a game seven anyway because it's win or go home for them. It's win or go home for them, without a doubt. Win or go home. So we'll have to wait and see come Sunday. At 8 o'clock on ABC again, and see if the Spurs can do what the LA Kings did and close out the series 3-1. It's going to be interesting. It's probably much see TV because of the fact is that so many people are on the Miami Heat bandwagon. Are they going to jump off like the fans did in the last game, leaving at halftime, booing their own team for the second time? Because they booed them in the game three. They booed them. And they booed them in game four, and they started leaving at halftime, if I'm not mistaken. Like rats on a drowning trip on a ship. They were just leaving in droves. We'll see what happens. You Miami Heat fans, maybe you aren't as loyal as you claim to be. Because regardless how you team, I mean, come on. You can't leave on your team. You can't leave on your team. Be for real here. But it is what it is. And we'll have to wait and see. Like I said, come 8 o'clock on Sunday night. All right. So I ranted enough for that. I ranted about over a half an hour on that. But I wanted to get all my thoughts out of it, and I was hoping that I would get somebody to call in. And we have a conversation about it. And for those who don't know what the number to call in is 347-637-3220. 347-637-3220. Trying to think what else I want to talk about before I happen to go into the first of the divisions in the NFL. And projections of the 2014 season, and see if I'm right about that. Huh? Well, not sure. Soccer's on the way. Stanley Cup just wound up. Oh, before I go any further, I just want to send the condolences out to the Knoll family. Chuck Knoll, if you don't know by now, I'm pretty sure you do if you follow sports, especially pro football. One of the best coaches in NFL history and the only coach to win 4 Super Bowls. Championships, Chuck Knoll, former coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers, passed away from natural causes at the ripe old age of 82. And like I said, I want to send my condolences to the Knoll family, and rest in peace, Chuck Knoll, hard-nosed coach, well-respected coach throughout the league and help bring that franchise back from the abyss that they were in before he got there. Like I said, four Super Bowl championships, and that Pittsburgh Steeler organization, he laid down a solid foundation for what's followed with Bill Cowher and for Mike Tomlin now. That Pittsburgh Steeler tradition, Pittsburgh Steeler legacy will live on. And that's definitely has to do with Coach Chuck Knoll and the way that that franchise has progressed throughout there. Six championships, people. Four from Chuck Knoll, one from Bill Cowher, one from Mike Tomlin. Six championships. So two coaches past Chuck Knoll, they still haven't matched the amount that he has given to that organization. Got to go and give him some props and hats off, and God bless the Chuck Knoll. With that being said, we got about 53 minutes left in this show. And like I said, the number to call in is 347-637-3220. 347-637-3220, the place to be if you want to talk to me. Where else do I want to go here before we start getting into the division here? Let me see here. No, I think it's time. I think it's time. I think it's time. All right, people.
Fantasy Sports.
Oh, sorry about that. Let me see here. All right. We'll go this way and see if we can garner some interest here. Let's start it off with this, okay? And one of the players, like I said, I wanted to start off with the AFC East. AFC North and the AFC South and then the AFC West. All right, all right. Let's do it this way. I wanted to play some music here, but I don't have the type of music I want to play here.
No! No! No!
Yeah, there we go.
No! No!
Carrying the ball 20 times a game requires power.
No, I don't like that. Well, let me do this. Let's do this first, and then we'll wrap that back.
No! No!
Carrying the ball 20 times a game requires power and valor, not niftiness. The water bug and whippet backs rarely survive the wail and howl of the banshee. Stacked defenses in the pros. They must meld the buck of a billy goat with the sudden surge of a sprinter. He does not move with polish or slickness. His method is not Grand Prix, but Demolition Derby.
All right, let's go this route here, all right? AFC East, Many NFL teams adopt a player for bust mentality, but how many actually live it? With the franchise for sale and its future uncertain following the death of team founder Ralph C. Wilson Jr. in March, the Buffalo Bills seem to be going for broke. How the front office, coaching staff, and players want to honor their departed patriarch is clear. It's one word. Win. And what can I tell you? People were having technical difficulties here for a minute. What the heck's going on here? We're having technical difficulties, people. Sorry for this. I got my PC's not responding well. Here, it's not responding well at all for some reason. What the heck is going on here? Anyway, wow. Unfortunately, the only thing Mr. Wilson was focused on was winning. I'm sorry. Unfortunately for the franchise and its fans, the Bills have missed the playoffs for a league-high 14 consecutive seasons. Okay? Employing an aggressive attitude to pay tribute to Wilson and stop this dubious streak, CEO Russ Brandon and General Manager Doug Whaley made a series of bold free agent moves and trades, none larger than sending a 2015 first round pick to Cleveland to move up 5 spots in the draft and select the top receiver in the draft that was available. The top wide receiver available is Clemson's Sammy Watkins. Bills offense. The Bills have made it clear that they are all in with E.J. Manuel as the starting quarterback. Not only did they hand him the top playmaker in the draft in Watkins, but they also added blocking depth and didn't draft another quarterback to compete with him. Manuel, the only first-round quarterback in 2013, set a Bills rookie record with 11 touchdown passes. But he missed 6 games with knee injuries and raised questions about his durability. If he's not healthy, he won't have a chance to fulfill his potential as a franchise quarterback with his size, arm strength, and worth ethic. All tools are there. Wow, this is tough here, people. My computer is acting up here. I don't know what's going on with it. Don't know what's happening here. I'm trying to... Give me a minute. Because it's really acting up. I lost my computer. Anyway. Let's talk about this. All right. Offensive coordinator Nathaniel Hackett will have a true number one wide receiver in Watkins. The Bills did not have a player in the NFL's top 50 in receptions, as veteran Stevie Johnson, since traded to San Francisco, provided incapable of giving Manuel a dominant, game-changing target Watkins, who had 240 career receptions and set 23 school records at Clemson, has the potential to be that guy. He has the lead ability to go up and snare passes and make things happen after the catch, and he instantly upgrades Buffalo's 28th-ranked passing game. With Watkins drawing coverage, Robert Woods, the first Bills rookie with 40 catches since Lee Evans in 2004, figures to blossom as does second-year pro Marquise Goodwin. The wild card is former Buck Mike Williams, who is looking to salvage his career under Doug Marrone, his college coach at Syracuse. Former Orange star Rob Moore is Marrone's new receivers coach. Tight end remains a pedestrian position with no real playmakers, but Buffalo continues to power to feel one of the NFL's most potent rushing attacks. Led by Fred Jackson, between the tackles power and C.J. Spiller's speed to the outside, they combined for 1,823 yards. A draft weekend trade with Philadelphia for Bryce Brown was a major upgrade in depth because Fred Jackson is on the wrong side of 30 as a running back, and he is injury-prone, as is C.J. Spiller, is not the most durable guy. So enters Bryce Brown to fill that void when one of those guys inevitably will go down. I'm telling you, people, somebody, one of those guys are going to go down, and Bryce Brown's going to fill that void, and quite naturally, he should do a good job. Buffalo's line is led by top center Eric Wood and left tackle Cordy Glenn, who figures to be better in his third season in the league. Overall, however, things regressed in 2013, with Buffalo allowing 48 sacks and converting just 34% of its third downs. That's thrown some jobs open for competition. St. Louis free agent Chris Williams will get a chance to win the starting left guard spot from Doug Legursky, and Giants-sized rookies Cyrus Kundejo, who was drafted in the second round, and Centrell Henderson, who was drafted in the seventh round, will push veteran Eric Pierce at right tackle. The Bills lost highly respected coordinator Mike Pettine, who is the coach now of the Cleveland Browns, who was hired by the Browns as the head coach. But Marrone reacted quickly, signing Jim Schwartz, who is a former Detroit Lions coach and who is a very good defensive coordinator, to run his defense, and hiring two other strong defensive assistants, Pepper Johnson, who's a very good defensive line coach, and Fred Packick, who's a linebackers coach. Pettine ran a hybrid 3-4 scheme, which failed to solve Buffalo's run-stopping problems but greatly improved his pass rush. Led by three players with 10 sacks or more, the club sets a club record with 57 sacks and led the AFC. On the back end, Buffalo recorded 23 interceptions and second most in the league. Schwartz favors a 4-3 alignment, but won't try to fix what's not broken and will incorporate some of Pettine's ideas that favored Buffalo's personnel so well. The Bills had The Bills had 41 sacks from defensive linemen led by Mario Williams, who had 13, Kyle Williams, who had 10.5, Jerry Hughes, who had 10, and Marcel Darius, who had 7.5. In Schwartz's scheme, strong side linebacker Manny Lawson, who had 4 sacks, will play end, while solid backups Alan Branch and Corbin Bryant kick inside to their tackle. The value to the team will rise depending on the fate of Darius, who is facing a league suspension after being arrested in Alabama on felony drug charges. A big part of Buffalo's pass rush is solid cover corners, and the team returns to two strong ones in Stephon Gilmore and Leotis McKelvin, two former first-round picks. McKelvin justified his four-year $17 million deal with his best season. Free agent Corey Graham from Baltimore adds great depth and versatility. The big loss was letting Pro Bowl free safety Jarius Byrd, who signed with the Saints for $54 million, depart in free agency. Byrd is one of the league's great ball hawks and will be missed. Denoris Searcy has talent and will have his first chance to start full-time. Aaron Williams, converted from corner, found a home at strong safety, returns to man that spot. The Bills need greatly improved play from the linebacking core. They had an outstanding linebacker. They caught lightning in a bottle, in my opinion. Kiko Alonso had 159 tackles and four interceptions in his rookie debut. Free agent Brandon Spikes, one of the game's best run stoppers, will man the middle. Spikes, who signed a one-year, $3 million deal, which I think that was a steal, wore out his welcome in New England and is motivated to land a long-term contract. And they also have free agent Keith Rivers, who will get a chance to nail down an outside position. Final analysis, flipping 6-10 to 10-6 will take more consistency from the offense and better run play by the defense. Ultimately, it's on Manuel to take his opportunity, stay healthy, and prove he's a franchise quarterback the team needs so desperately. With no first-round pick in 2015 and a future new owner to impress, there is immense pressure on Manuel in the front office to win now. The schedule is this, all right. At Chicago, they start at September 7th is when it starts. At Chicago, home against Miami, home against San Diego, at Houston, at Detroit, home against New England. That's a tough way to go there. Wow. San Diego, Houston, Detroit, New England. That is tough. Home against Minnesota, at the New York Jets. They have a bye in week 9. Then they go home against Kansas City, at Miami, which is the Thursday night game, home against the Jets, home against Cleveland, and then these two games back-to-back in December, and this is crucial games, at Denver and home against Green Bay. And then they close the season out on the road at Oakland, and unfortunately for them, at New England. So I think in order for them to get in the playoffs, they have to win at least 10 games, and I cannot see that happening. I see them on the negative side of winning. And I'm thinking that they're going to go probably 6-10. I can't see them winning that many games. They may win a game against Minnesota. They may win a game against the Jets, possibly playing home against Cleveland. They'll win that game. That's three. Possibility, and it may not be. They win a game against Oakland. That's four. Maybe home against Minnesota, that's five. So I'm giving them six wins, and I think I'm being generous. It's going to be a tough season, I think, for the Buffalo Bills. But, and, you know, a lot of banking on Sammy Watkins. For the most part, rookie wide receivers don't do well, but Keenan Allen did well last year, and he was fed the ball quite a bit. If E.J. Manuel, who has a big arm, can be accurate enough going against Sammy Watkins, he doesn't have bad receivers. Robert Wood, Marquise Goodwin, and Sammy Watkins. That's a nice young along with veteran Mike Williams. That's a nice set of wide receivers. I like those wide receivers. They're not bad. It's not bad, but those four wide receivers, you know that the first round pick is going to be fed the ball a lot. Guaranteed going to be fed the ball a lot. And don't normally take a rookie wide receivers, but in the later rounds in fantasy, if he's sitting there at 10, 11, and later, I'm taking Sammy Watkins. I don't know. I doubt if he's going to be sitting there because he's a name. He got drafted high in a real NFL draft and in fantasy. But he's a rookie wide receiver. But they're going to showcase. They want to be able to use this kid. Just like Keenan Allen, when he was given the opportunity and he was getting fed all the time by Phillip Rivers, he became a stud. I think Sammy Watkins can do that. It all depends on E.J. Manuel. But I see the Bills not being on the bottom, but I see them being third in the NFC East. So let's move on to the Miami Dolphins and talk about the Miami Dolphins coming off one of the more eventful 8-8 seasons in recent memory. The Miami Dolphins hope they are ready to make more of their news on the field, dogged by an embarrassing bullying scandal that put them in the national spotlight. While taking two starters off the offensive line, Joe Philbin's team was actually positioned to make the playoffs prior to a punchless finish. They scored a total of one touchdown in dropping their final two games to the also-ran Jets and Bills. Philbin survived the offseason. I don't know how. I really don't know how. In my opinion, there's no way he should have survived that. No way. He should have survived that. Oh, man. I can't believe what is going on here. This. Oh, God. Hold on, people. I'm still having here technical difficulties here. Jesus Christ. Anyway, like I said, I don't know how he survived. I really don't, because it was actually positioned to make a playoff, and they didn't, and it was such a mess. The guy who definitely got the axe was the GM Jeff Ireland, and offensive coordinator and offensive line coach Mike Sherman, and Jim Turner were sacrificed. After several top candidates took their names out of contention for the GM job, Tampa Bay executive Dennis Hickey took a promotion to run the personnel operation. Hickey kept most of the core intact during the offseason, aiming to provide third-year quarterback Ryan Tannehill with better protection while working in greater harmony with Philbin than Ireland did. We're on the same page of what we want our organization to be founded on. That's what the quote from Hickey. Trust, integrity, respect, communication, all those things are common. Uncommon of late, playoff appearances. There's been only one, which is in 2008, in the past 12 seasons, that the Miami Dolphins have been in the playoffs. If the Miami falls short again, you can best believe that the axe is going to fall on Jerry Philbin. Not Jerry Philbin. Joe Philbin, I'm sorry. Tannehill is now on his own and yet perhaps less alone. Makes sense, consider that he'll be without his college coach, Sherman, for the first time as a pro. The Dolphins heeded the complaints of players and fans and made a change at coordinator. Miami hopes that new coordinator Bill Lazor can replicate his success working with Nick Foles in Philadelphia, where he served as the quarterback's coach. At age 42, Lazor has already had a diverse set of coaching influences working under Chip Kelly, Mike Holmgren, and Joe Gibbs. Now, I didn't know that he's going to incorporate the same type of high-tempo, high-speed offense that Chip Kelly runs. What I'm interested in these three things with Bill: increased play speed, increased accuracy, and cut down turnovers. That's what Joe Philbin said about his offensive coordinator. It will help if Tannehill has more time after his sacks skyrocketed from 35 to 58 in his past second season. Miami will go to a zone blocking scheme, likely with four new starters flanking talented but still immature center Mike Pouncey. And from the things that he's been saying and doing over the past offseason, I don't think he gets it. The new key component is left tackle Brandon Albert, a longtime target, and received $25 million guaranteed to leave Kansas City. Miami has new starting running back too, and while Knowshon Moreno likely won't be as productive as he was when playing with Peyton Manning, he should upgrade a spot that was one of the worst in an NFL season. Now, update on that: Knowshon Moreno, and you guys got to pay attention. Is Knowshon Moreno showed up out of shape, he's supposedly playing with the second team, and Lamar Miller has taken first-team snaps. This was in the OTAs and minicamp. So just keep an eye on that, because Lamar Miller is supposedly showing a lot more than he showed last year, and maybe it's because of the offensive scheme or whatever was going on there. And we'll have to wait and see about that. The Dolphins do have some weapons. If Tannehill can stay upright, his primary assignment is finding a way to connect with speedster Mike Wallace, and he's going to be used a lot. He's taking snaps, handoffs in the backfield, so they're going to move him all over the field because he's got the speed to get open, and they're going to use him all over the field to make more use and be more versatile on offense. So that, in my opinion, he's going to probably be a decent sleeper in Mike Williams. Mike Wallace was sometimes Wallace was wide open and Tannehill was short by several steps. Sometimes Wallace seemed not to want to fight for the ball. In fact, Tannehill still appeared most comfortable with Brian Hartline, who led the team in the receptions and yards, with Charles Clay, who surprised everyone by becoming a consistently productive tight end. Others, including improving Rashad Matthews, and what's out for this guy, the healing Brandon Gibson, and the rookie Jarvis Landry, give Miami quality depth. For all the change, there was something that needed to stay the same. Brent Grimes manning a cornerback spot. The diminutive but ultra-athletic Grimes proved to be a steal on a one-year deal, and now he's back on a long-term contract. The Miami Dolphins, who slipped in most defensive categories from 2012, couldn't afford to lose their most consistent performer. After a breakout 2012, strong safety Rashad Jones made few impactful plays in 2013 and often took poor angles. He'll need to be better, whether he's paired with a holdover Jimmy Wilson or veteran newcomer Louis Delmas. Competition is open at the other cornerback, while rookie disappointment Jamar Taylor and Will Davis have a shot, especially a feisty addition Cortland Finnegan. Best days are behind him. I still like Cortland Finnegan. He's a wily veteran, and I do believe he can serve well in what he does best. Linebacker came to symbolize Ireland's struggles in free agency. Daniel Ellerbe and Philip Wheeler proved to be downgrades from the departed Carlos Dansby and Kevin Burnett. I don't understand. Carlos Dansby went from the Miami Dolphins to the Arizona Cardinals, and now he's with the Cleveland Browns. And I, for the life of me, don't understand why they won't hold on to this guy. This guy is a tackling machine, and he performs wherever he goes. So, so we'll have to wait and see. Okay. One of the key players in Dolphins offseason, Lindsey Smith, that's the college sweetheart of After 7 years, the Dolphins will be going back to London, England, this time to play the Raiders in Wembley Stadium in Week 4 of the 2014 season. Miami lost to the Giants there in 2007, which shouldn't have been as surprising. The Dolphins lost 15 of 16 games that season. All right. Additions were, like I said, Brandon Albert, Louis Dumas, Courtland Finnegan, Earl Mitchell, Noshawn Moreno, and Shelly Smith. While they lost Nolan Carroll, Tyson Clambo, Chris Clemens, Richie Incognito, quite naturally, John Jerry, Jonathan Martin, which everybody knows quite naturally, and Bryant McKinney, and Paul Sulele. All right. Dolphins schedule. Home against New England. At Buffalo. Home against Kansas City. Like I said, September the 8th, week 4, versus Oakland. They're going to be the home team versus Oakland. They have a bye in week 5, which is an early bye. Then they play, the next two games are pretty tough. They play Green Bay at home, at Chicago, at Jacksonville, home against San Diego, at Detroit, home against Buffalo on Thursday night, at Denver, at New York Jets Monday night, home against Baltimore. This is pretty tough here. Home against Baltimore, at New England, home against Minnesota, and home against the Jets. Let me see here. Let me see how many I can pull out of here. Wow. I see this a very tough season for the Miami Dolphins. I see them fourth in the division, which is sitting on the bottom. And I see them winning 4 games. Possibility they split with the Jets. They split with Buffalo. That's 2 wins. At Jacksonville. I don't know if they're going to beat Jacksonville at Jacksonville. I'll give them Jacksonville. That's 3. And they play Oakland. I'll give them an Oakland win. I see 4 wins for the Miami Dolphins. Can't see anything more than that. I'd be surprised if it's anything more than that. So, it is what it is. Let's move on to the New England Patriots, the class of the league. They won the league God knows how many times. Last year they were number 2 seed in the AFC, which is nothing new. While the Patriots were among the NFL's elite in 2013 with a 12-4 record and number 2 seed in the AFC, they were clearly a notch below the Seahawks, Broncos, and 49ers. Now the question is, have they done enough in the offseason to get back into the Super Bowl title discussion that they were clearly in the middle of from 2010 to 2012? They lost Aqib Talib, and adding Darrell Revis qualifies as an upgrade at the all-important cornerback position. The other major addition are really just Pro Bowl quality players getting healthy. Pat Platts did not have Jerry Mayo, Vince Wilfork, or Rob Gronkowski for their player front? Should all three be 100%, and if Tom Brady continues to win his battle with Father Time, and you're talking about him now because he's 37, the Super Bowl will once again be a realistic goal. Offense, the Patriots have plenty of certainties on offense. Brady at quarterback, five starters returning on the offensive line, Julian Edelman heading the wide receiver core, but there's one rather large unknown, the health of Gronkowski. Tight end tore his ACL against Cleveland in week 14 and underwent surgery on January 9th. And he's been partying up a storm. I guess since he's been healthy, he's been all over the place, Vegas and some other places. God, Gronkowski could be active by the time the Patriots open the season at Miami. But given the $53 million investment the team made in the former second-round pick, look for him and the team to be extra cautious because he's been brittle for the last two seasons. He had multiple issues with his arm, now he tore his ACL. After playing in every game for his first 2 years, Gronkowski has played in just 18 due to wrist, back, and knee issues since his signing his big deal in 2012. When he plays, the Patriots' offense thrives, with number 87 racking up 42 touchdowns in 50 regular season games. When he is out, quite naturally, Brady loses a major weapon. Not that Brady isn't used to making do with what's available. Gronkowski pass-catching running back Shane Vereen and wide receiver Danny Amendola all missed chunks of time due to injury last season. Wes Welker and Aaron Hernandez also departed in the offseason. So how did the Pats do? Brady had his lowest passer rating, 87.3, since 2003, and fewest touchdowns. He only threw 25 since 2006. However, the Pats still managed to finish third in the NFL in scoring at 27.8 points a game. The Pats enjoyed unexpected production out of LeGarrette Blount. He was a beast for a while there, who led the team in rushing 9 times, including an electrifying 166-yard, 4-touchdown effort in a playoff win over the Colts. Blount signed with the Pittsburgh Steelers in the offseason, leaving the Pats with familiar faces Stephen Ridley and Shane Vereen as the main running backs. And if you know fantasy football, Stephen Ridley's fumble troubles sent him to the sidelines for a portion of last season. But many believe he's the most talented back on the roster and should be able to ring up 1,000 yards like he did in 2012. Vereen racked up 54 catches despite missing 8 games with a broken wrist. Is Brady losing a step? What do you mean a step? He's not running quarterback, perhaps, but he has proven time and again that he can produce when given suitable weapons at the skill position. If his prime targets remain healthy in 2014, don't be surprised if he's in the discussion for a third MVP trophy. Now he's been able to bring the best out of mediocre talent because he's Tom Brady. They have a system. The system works. If you are able to pick up the system, you'll be able to thrive in the system. The biggest storyline in the offseason was the acquisition of Revis days after Tlaib signed with Denver. Tlaib was a critical piece of the Patriots' defense for 1.5 seasons, but it can be argued that the Pats upgraded at the position with Revis. Despite still recovering from a torn ACL early in 2013, Revis started all 16 games with the Bucs and reached his 5th Pro Bowl. He's only 29, is one of the best corners in the game, and should give coach Bill Belichick the same options Tlaib did in terms of taking away an opponent's top receiver. Patriots also signed Super Bowl winning Seattle's cornerback Brandon Browner, who will miss the first 4 games due to a drug suspension. Browner is a physical corner who will be a candidate to start opposite Revis or even possibly slide over to play some safety. The added depth will only help a back line that ranked ninth in opposing quarterback rating in 2013. The front seven will welcome back two cornerstones in Mayo and Wolfolk. Mayo missed the final 12 games, including the playoff with a torn pectoral muscle, while Wolfolk missed the final 14 games after tearing his Achilles. Both should be 100%, though at age 32, there is concern whether Wolfolk will be able to regain the form that earned him Pro Bowl invites from 2009 to 2012. The Pats spent their first-round draft pick on an interior lineman, Dominique Easley, who missed most of his final year in Florida with a torn ACL. At the defensive end, the Patriots added a key piece late in free agency, signing Will Smith as the third rusher to spell Chandler Jones and Rob Ninkovich. Smith missed 2013 with a torn ACL, but averaged 7.8 sacks per season from 2009 to 2012. Two second-year players will be taking on critical roles on the Patriots defense. Jamie Collins could potentially be a three-down linebacker after coming on as strong toward the end of his rookie season. Collins was brought along slowly last year, but his athleticism really showed in a playoff win over the Colts when he had six tackles and a sack and an interception. Collins, Mayo, and Dante Hightower will form a top-flight linebacking core. And we do have a caller here on the Fantasy Sportsbook and Casino.com hotline. Let me bring him in now. I know who he is and see what he has to say. Welcome, Mr. Vic Gardner. With less than 15 minutes left in the show, how are you today?
I am doing absolutely fabulous. It's a great Army afternoon.
Do you have blue skies and clear skies ahead of you, or what?
I've got clear blue skies and a lot of damn heat.
And a lot of what?
Heat.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
It is
what it is. What can I tell you? You know, you being the stout person that you are, maybe that heat will help you sweat some of that off.
Oh, no, you didn't. No, you didn't. I am not stout, by the way.
No?
No. I am well maintained.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is it?
Anyway, continue with your breakdown of the teams. I didn't get a chance to listen to any because I was out here in the sun. But I think the Patriots are in trouble.
You said that last year. And were you so wrong?
No, I wasn't. Because they looked very bad at the beginning of the year, which I said they would. But the team, they didn't capitalize on it. That's the bottom line. They didn't capitalize.
Well, Let me put it this way. If they look so bad, they went 12-4 last year. 12-4. Come on, Victor.
Their performance in the first half of the season was terrible. They were winning by the other team's failure to capitalize. Big time.
Well, I mean, let's look at last year. Last year, the first four games they played Buffalo, Jets, Tampa Bay, and Atlanta. Okay.
Yep.
The only one that had a winning record out of that was, if I'm not mistaken, was the Jets. Well, they did have win. They had a 500 year. All the other teams didn't perform well at all. So I can understand that, but that's the schedule they were given. I mean, they lost at Cincinnati. They beat New Orleans. Come on. They had a decent schedule. They played Pittsburgh. They played Denver. They beat Denver. They beat Baltimore. They beat Indianapolis in the playoffs. I mean, I mean, the schedule they had is the schedule they had. I understand the team that they played. They played the Jets. They played Buffalo. They played Tampa Bay. They played Atlanta. And these are the bad teams I'm talking about. They played Houston. They played Cleveland. Okay, so they played the Jets. They played the Jets, which is a 500 team. I understand that. Miami was going through a bad time because of all the stuff that was going there. Cleveland, they had quarterbacks in and out. Buffalo, quite naturally, they had quarterbacks in and out because of they had issues with E.J. Manuel and the backup quarterback, who escapes me right now. But and then Tampa Bay had issues with the quarterbacks. But they did beat some quality teams in between that. They beat Denver, like I said. They beat Baltimore. They beat New Orleans. Those are quality wins there.
Mr. Taylor?
Yeah.
It's okay. What I said was that the beginning of the season, there was some opportunity by teams to make New England at 500 plus. They missed those opportunities. I mean, the Jets almost beat them twice. Buffalo almost beat them twice. The problem I see with the Patriots is their lack of explosiveness. I mean, Aaron Dobson, he should show up this year. They got a young core receivers. Young core receivers. I don't even know if they re-signed Danny Amendola. Gronk should be back, but how healthy will Gronk be? Have they settled on their running back situation? Is it going to be a running back by committee, or are they going to have a pounder? If you notice, they drafted a lot of defensive players because they saw their defense was a little weak. New England is not as good as everybody thinks they are.
You keep saying that, and they keep on putting up double-digit wins year after year.
That's fun.
I don't know what you're looking at, but apparently you're not looking at what everyone else is looking at.
They play in a weak division.
Well, besides that, I mean, let me put it this way: there's two teams that played the New England tough. They don't lose against Buffalo. That's a given. Okay, that's a given. But the Jets split with them last year, and the Miami Dolphins split with them last year, so they did lose twice to division opponents. The Jets beat them in New York.
New England? Oh,
no, they beat them in New York, and Miami beat them in Miami. So, that's usually the modus operandi that those two teams usually split. For the most part, with New England, Buffalo historically doesn't win against the Patriots. So I'm looking. You know, you had said last year that the Patriots were going to come back to the division, and that Miami was going to overtake them. You were extremely sadly mistaken about that. That wasn't even a close call.
One mistake.
Excuse me.
I said one mistake.
That wasn't even close. Miami was 8-8. The Jets were 8-8. That wasn't even a close call. And the Bills were 6-10. And I don't think Miami wins that many games this year. I really don't. From what with the schedule I'm seeing, I think those two teams, the Bills and Miami, are going to contend for who gets to the bottom first. And I see the schedule here. I'm going to go down it, and you give me the amount of wins you think is going to happen here. The 2014 schedule for the New England Patriots is this: at Miami, at Minnesota,
lost. Win.
Home against Oakland.
Win.
At Kansas City on Monday night.
Lost.
That's a short week. A long week. Home against Cincinnati. Now, that's a short week.
They're home in Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm.
Win. I give them a win.
At Buffalo.
What week is this? Six?
Week six, yes.
I give them a loss.
Okay. So let me do this real quick. You said at Miami is a win. Is that what you told me?
Miami's a win.
Okay. At Minnesota.
It's a win.
That's a win. Home against Oakland.
Oh, no, excuse me. I said Miami's going to beat New England. Miami's going to beat New England. I'm sorry.
Home opener for Miami. They're going to beat New England. Is that what you're telling me?
Yes.
Okay. Home against Oakland.
A win.
Okay. At Kansas City Monday night.
A loss.
Home against Cincinnati.
Win.
At Buffalo.
Loss.
Home against the Jets on Thursday night, short week.
Home against the Jets, short week. Win.
Wow. Home against Chicago.
Loss.
Home against Denver.
Loss.
Bye week at Indianapolis off the bye.
Win.
Home against Detroit.
Win.
At Green Bay.
Ooh, loss.
What's that?
Loss.
Loss. At San Diego.
Win.
Wow. Home against Miami.
Win.
At New York Jets.
Loss.
Home against Buffalo.
Win. 8-8.
Okay, hold on. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
Let me count that. I thought I gave him 8.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. 9-7. So you think the Patriots are going to be 9-7 with this schedule?
Yes.
And you gave them, hold on a minute, let me just see. You gave them a split with Miami. You gave them a split with the Jets.
New York.
And you gave them double wins against Buffalo. No, you gave them a split with Buffalo.
Yep.
Okay. And they win at Minnesota. They lose at Kansas City. They lose at Green Bay. And win at San Diego.
Yep.
And win against Detroit.
Yep.
Wow.
And they beat the Raiders.
And they win at Indianapolis.
Yep.
Okay. Well, I'd have to, I'm trying to see where I can put a chink in the armor here. I think they, with the two back-to-back, the two back-to-back games in Chicago and Denver, I think they would at least split one of those. So that's another win for me. I think they'd be 10-6 versus 9-7 at least in this. I don't think they lose both those games back-to-back, especially when both of them are at home. And it's a long week because the fact is they play the Jets on Thursday night, so they have a 10 days between the game, that game in Chicago and that game against Chicago's home. So I think that's a win, in my opinion. But it is what it is. Let's move on to the last but not least in the AFC East. Like that, right?
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
would be the New York Football Jets. The Jets have missed the playoffs for three straight seasons, during which time they've gone 8-8, 6-10, and 8-8 again last season. But owner Woody Johnson and general manager John Idzik decided to bring coach Rex Ryan back for a sixth season. Ryan, despite an extension, is essentially coaching for his job again in 2014. The Jets are to make the playoffs, which would significantly help Ryan's case, they must improve their passing offense and passing defense. And we're going to be going overtime just to finish this out, and then we'll be out of here. I forecast the Jets to be the number two in this division, for one. Some of the passing offense issues last year was due to rookie Geno Smith's struggles, but he didn't have a lot of weapons to work with. He has more now. The Jets' pass defense is rebuilding with the release of veteran cornerback Antonio Cromartie and the first-round draft selection of safety Calvin Pryor, which is a heck of a pickup. He's like, in my opinion, a human bowling ball. He loves to hit and inflict pain on anybody who comes close to him. Calvin Pryor is a heck of a pickup for the Jets. The Jets have a strong running game that is perhaps stronger now. They have one of the best defensive lines in the NFL, and they can shore up their passing game issues on both sides of the ball. They could be a playoff contender in 2014. The offense went out and got the first free agent receiver available, the best free agent receiver available, Eric Decker. That's before DeSean Jackson became on the scene, but that was after the fact. But he is enough of a speedy downfield threat to be a number one receiver. No, he's not. Plus, how much were his stats in Denver a product of Peyton Manning? All that remains to be seen. Instead of drafting a receiver in the first round, the Jets supplemented their passing game with several other pieces. They drafted a tight end in the second round, Chase Amaro, who was basically a receiver in college. They added speed to their backfield by signing running back Chris Johnson, who has always been a receiving threat. He's probably seen better days, but I wouldn't discount him. I think they didn't use him as well as they could have in Tennessee. He's 29 in September, but I still think he's got something left, and a lot left to prove in football. You have to wonder how much Johnson has left. Like I said, he played last season with a torn meniscus in his knee and had the least productive of his year. Well, he played hurt. They won't lean on him because they also have a Chris Ivory, so they're going to use a thunder and lightning type of thing. Despite all these additions, the Jets' offense success or lack thereof will largely hinge on whether Smith can make better decisions in his second season. His numbers last season were dreadful: 12 touchdowns, 21 interceptions. And the Jets signed Michael Vick this offseason to push him, but they preferred Smith to win his job. Younger, more, pliable, more coachable than Michael Vick. He's pretty much set in his ways, but he knows Marty Morningway's scheme well, and he should be able to perform well in it. Under Ryan, the Jets have regularly fielded a strong defense, but the past two seasons they ranked 25th and 30th in the NFL in yards gained and 29th and 28th in points scored. Throw in Mark Sanchez, and over the past three seasons, the Jets' starting quarterbacks have combined 57 interceptions. Until those numbers improve, the Jets won't be a playoff team. Defense, the good news, the Jets have a prodigious defensive line led by Muhammad Wilkerson and tackle Sheldon Richardson. Wilkerson, arguably the Jets' best player on either side of the ball, has an absurd combination of size, 6'4", 315 pounds, and speed that makes him a pass rushing terror, 10.5 sacks last year, and only getting better. Richardson shows elite agility for a 294-pound player on his way to winning NFL Defensive Rookie of the Year last season. He also rushed for two touchdowns in goal line situations. The Jets could use more production from rush outside linebacker Quentin Coupled, which I do believe he's only going to get better. He had 4.5 sacks last year, 5.5 the year before as a rookie, but the defensive front is solid. The issue comes in the secondary. Yes, it does. D. Milner looked lost at times last year. The rookie Cromartie battling a hip injury couldn't defend deep balls. The Jets failed to land an elite free agent corner to replace him. They only got Dimitri Patterson, who will be 31. This season has never proven itself as a consistent starter. The Jets need to hope their safeties and Calvin Pryor in particular, which I really like, Calvin Pryor can cover up for their cornerbacks. Pryor's ability to hit and stop the run is unassailable. But can he cover slot receivers and tight ends in the NFL? The Jets had better hope so. Pryor will likely challenge Antonio Allen, a seventh-round pick in 2012, for a starting spot. Allen also had to learn cover skills in the NFL since he was an outside linebacker in college. Like Smith, Milner is under tremendous pressure in year two to live up to his potential. Milner is now the number one corner. Good luck, Jets, in the offensive and the defensive backfield with that. He will get the toughest assignments. He closed strong last year and was named NFL Defensive Rookie of the Month for December. The Jets need him to keep it up. All right, I'm not going to go any further with the defense. This is not a Super Bowl contender, and the roster does not even seem as talented as Ryan's first two Jet teams, which made back-to-back AFC Championship game appearances in 2009 and 2010. But these Jets don't need to reach the doorstep of the Super Bowl to help Ryan's job security. Making the playoffs alone would be a start. It won't be easy. From weeks 2 to 7, the Jets face six brutally efficient pass offenses: Green Bay, Chicago, Detroit, San Diego, Denver, and New England. Last season, those teams ranked 6th, 5th, 3rd, 4th, 1st, and 10th in the NFL in passing yards. If the offense isn't clicking early in the season, since it might have to score a bunch of points to win those games, the Jets could be out of the playoff race by the time they reach their bye in week 11. But if Smith, Decker, and Johnson prove to be a successful combination, look for the Jets to battle for a playoff spot well into December. And this is my analysis of the Jets. They're going to painfully go into the season as long as they possibly can with Geno Smith before they revert to Michael Vick. They're going to give Geno Smith every possible opportunity to start the season and to keep that starting quarterback job throughout the season before they revert to Michael Vick. John Izik, this is his quarterback. This is his franchise quarterback, so they're going to try to go ride Geno Smith until it hurts. Excuse me, and it's going to probably be hurt until it's probably too late for the Jets to make the playoffs. The schedule of the Jets is as follows. Starting off home against Oakland, and like they say, at Green Bay, home against Chicago on Monday night, home against Detroit, at San Diego, home against Denver, at New England on a Thursday night, home against Buffalo, at Kansas City, home against Pittsburgh, until they go to the bye, and they're going to need it in week 11. Then after the bye, they go at Buffalo, home against Miami on Monday night, at Minnesota, at Tennessee, home against New England, and at Miami. I'm looking at this schedule. This is a brutal, absolutely brutal schedule. At Green Bay, they play Green Bay, Chicago, Detroit, San Diego, Denver, New England, get a break against Buffalo, at Kansas City, and at Pittsburgh. I can't see them winning any of those games, and that's truthful. I cannot see them winning any of those games. They're not going to win it at Green Bay. They're not going to beat Chicago. Too much offense on Chicago. Detroit, maybe. I don't see it. At San Diego, they do play San Diego tough, but San Diego's only getting better. Home against Denver, let me put it this way. I ran the schedule down. I'm going to give it to you, Vic. How many wins, realistically, I ran down that schedule, do the Jets have in 2014?
10 to 11.
Excuse me?
10 to 11.
You know what? Let me ask you something. How hot is it where you're at? Because I think you either got heat exhaustion or heat stroke, one or the other. Give me a reason why you think the Jets would win 10 or 11 games out of that. And this is an extremely brutal schedule. Give it to me. Talk to me.
You name the three reasons. Vic, Johnson, Decker. Listen. The problem was they went with Geno Smith. They saw what Geno Smith could do. They saw that he's wildly inconsistent. One week he's throwing for 300 yards and a touchdown. The next week he's throwing for 100 yards and three interceptions. I understand that he might be the future. But you also have to understand that he was not invested in as if he is the future. He got picked, what, in the second or third round, right?
He got picked in the second round.
Okay, second round. So they knew they weren't going to invest all that money in him because he probably wasn't going to start. By all rights, Mark Sanchez defeated Geno Smith in their quarterback competition. If not for an injury, Mark Sanchez would have started the season as the quarterback. Michael Vick is three times the quarterback that Mark Sanchez is. You add Chris Johnson, and here's what you get, Mr. Taylor, a triple threat. Chris Johnson will have open lanes because people are thinking Michael Vick's going to run. He's got the arm to get it to Decker, but he doesn't have to throw it deep because Decker can just run an in route. I hate to tell you this, but I'm going to tell you anyway. When Jerry leaves the Jets win. When Jerry joins the Houston Texans, the Houston Texans lose. Again, 10 to 11 wins. And I'm more than happy to go down the schedule and call them off. I'm
sure.
Telling you the team is more advanced than people want to give them credit for.
Okay, well, let me. I'm going to run the schedule down, and you give me win-lose. Home
okay.
Against Oakland.
Win.
At Green Bay.
Win.
Oh. Home against Chicago, Monday night.
Win.
Home against Detroit.
Win.
What? At San Diego.
Win.
Get out of here. Home against Denver.
Loss.
At New England, Thursday night.
I think I said they lose that game, so loss.
That's a short week. They play Denver and then they play New England on Thursday night.
I said loss.
Both losses, right?
Yep.
Home against Buffalo.
Win.
At Kansas City.
At Kansas City. I'm going to say, wow. That's my toss-up game, but I'm going to give them a loss.
They never play Pittsburgh well. Home against Pittsburgh.
Win.
Wow. They never play Pittsburgh well. They never play Pittsburgh well. I know this team like the back of my hand. Pittsburgh always gives
care.
It fits. Wow. That okay. Anyway. Anyway. They by week 11 off the bye, they play at Buffalo.
When?
So they're going to sweep Buffalo. Okay. Then they go and play Monday night against Miami, home.
Loss.
You're going to lose against Miami, home. Okay. At Minnesota.
Loss.
At Tennessee.
Win. Chris
home
Johnson
against
goes for 200 in that game.
Excuse me?
Chris Johnson goes for 200 yards in that game.
Home against New England.
Win.
At Miami.
Win.
Get 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. 11 wins you have the Jets at. You have them beating, Green Bay in Green Bay, then coming back and beat, and then coming back on Monday night and playing their division rival, the Chicago Bears, and beating that, and then they played the NFC North 3 weeks in a row, and you haven't beaten all three teams.
Yes, because it's the first part of the season. You have to understand when they're playing them, Jay. Second game of the season, Green Bay. Okay, they're trying to get all their little new pieces together. I got it. Macy's going to be a beast. I got it, but he's going against Rex Ryan's defense. Green Bay's defense is not that great. With Chris Johnson, Michael Vick in the mix, you got something there. You add in Eric Decker. Green Bay doesn't have a cornerback that's going to cover Decker. So that's a win, second game of the season. Third game of the season. Might be close, but Detroit's going to beat Chicago. The only reason why I say this is because Jay Cutler's going to force the ball to Brandon Marshall. He is going to forget about Alshon Jeffries, and that's going to come up with a couple of picks. Detroit might be a loss, but I'm going to give him a win just because you said it's in Detroit, right?
No, it's home. They're playing home.
Okay, that makes it even better. It's a home game. Yeah, it's on turf, but it's in the element. So we're talking about October time frame.
No, we're talking
so
last Sunday in September.
Okay. All right, fine. But you're at home, turf, Chris Johnson. Again, that fast, hard-hitting defense. Golden Tate will not show up. Nate Burleson is way better than Golden Tate, in my opinion. Just healthier. So, with that being said, that's how I got that going.
Wow. I'm amazed. I'm simply amazed. You have them winning more games than the New England Patriots.
I know. I got them.
And you have them in that case, you have them winning the division.
Yes, I do.
Wow. Another bold statement from Mr. Vic Gardner. Just remember what happened last season. Just remember what happened. The Jets wound up 8-8. The Miami Dolphins wound up 8-8, and the Buffalo Bills wound up 6-10. And the New England Patriots, what you said were going to be not that good, wound up 12-4.
Okay.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to remind you, just in case you may have forgotten that.
I did not forget it.
Okay. With that being said, Mr. Gardner, we come to the end of the show. I want to thank you for joining me for the tail end of it. It doesn't make a difference when you join. It's always a pleasure when we talk to each other. Tune in next week, people, where we went through the AFC East. The next one on the docket will be the AFC North. Like I said, the first 4 weeks are going to be the AFC, AFC East we did today, AFC North next week. The following week after that will be the AFC South, and we're going to end it up with the AFC West, and then we start with the NFC East. And do the same sequence. So 8 weeks from now, we'll be done with all eight divisions, and we'll go from there. And then we can start with our fantasy talk. Mr. Gardner, is there anything that you would like to say before we get the hell out of here?
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, Mr. Gardner, Mr. FSP himself has entered the building for a brief moment to share the most insightful information possible to you and yours. Listen, we have several fantasy football leagues going on. We're always looking for new talent. All you got to do is drop us a line. Go ahead and give your email address out, JCATMoney.
My email address? Is J as in the letter J, Taylor, T-A-Y-L-O-R, all one word, 342 at Comcast.net. I'll say it again. It's J, as in the letter J, Taylor, T-A-Y-L-O-R, 342 at Comcast.net. Drop me a line. I'll pass it on to our esteemed commissioner of several leagues. And if you have the balls, and I'm going to say that right on the air, if you have the balls to get in with us in a fantasy league, I think you'll enjoy it, and we appreciate your donation.
I concur with that last statement. We appreciate your donation. I got a couple people that are going to join. I got to invite them to the new leagues. But, ladies and gentlemen, I guarantee you, you're going to get the best information to prep for your fantasy drafts for your fantasy football leagues year-round. We're going to add something new this year to the football segment of the show. We're going to start selling picks. That's right. I'm going to put a big ad out, and on our website, spotonradio.webs.com, we're going to list a way for you to get our Surefire winners. You'll become a client. Just listen and believe. Listen and believe. With that being said, ATH and Money, I want everybody to go to fantasysportsbookandcasino.com, where winners win and players play to place a wager on some World Cup soccer today. And on Sunday, go back and place a wager on the closeout game of the NBA Finals. I don't know if you talked about it or not, JT. But
I spent about 40 minutes in the beginning of the show talking about that. So yes.
Okay. So when Donald Sterling exposes all of these owners, I want to see what the NBA players do. Again, I'm calling for a boycott. Will it happen? I don't know. But I'm calling for it. That's all I got, JT.
All right. With that being said, I want to thank Vic Gardner for joining us. Tune in tomorrow on Master Plan. I'm going to be talking about Donald Sterling. I'm glad you brought that up. We'll be talking about Donald Sterling and what may be in store for the NBA, along with talking some more about the NBA Finals and my fantasy baseball team. I always every Sunday, regardless of if I'm winning or losing.
Losing.
I'm gonna be talking about the league and my fantasy football team. I mean, fantasy baseball team. So tune in tomorrow, and I hope you enjoyed today's show, and hopefully you tune in tomorrow and enjoy me on Father's Day on the Master Plan at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. With that being said, Vic, you know what to do.
Ladies and gentlemen, happy Father's Day to the guys out there and to my boy JT. But you've been listening to...
Oh, man. Oh, it's killing me. My computer's been screwing up big time. So what I'm going to do is this, people. We're just going to sign off and say we're out of here. And I'll have to leave it at that. With that being said, I want to thank everyone for joining us. And we out. See ya.